Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Good morning. You picked a great day to come here because I'm going to read my favorite sutta of them all. Now, this sutta, it's kind of hard to find, but I would have never found this sutta unless I went and found it myself. I had to go reading the suttas. This was not taught to me by any teacher except the Buddha. So this is Samyutta Nikaya 47.8, The Cook, that's the title. So part one, The Incompetent Cook. Bhikkhus, suppose a foolish, incompetent, unskillful cook were to present a king or a royal minister with various kinds of curries, sour, bitter, pungent, sweet, sharp, mild, salty, bland. That foolish, incompetent, unskillful cook does not pick up the sign of his master's preference. The sign of his master's preference, like what his customer prefers. Today, this curry pleased my master, or he reached for this one, or he took a lot of this one, or he spoke in praise of this one, or the sour curry pleased my master today, or he reached for the sour one, or he took a lot of the sour one, or he spoke in praise of the sour one, or the bitter curry, and so on and so forth, or the pungent curry, or the sweet curry, or the sharp curry, or the mild curry, or the salty curry, or the bland curry pleased my master. Or he spoke in praise of the bland one. Okay, so he goes over every kind of curry, and for every curry, the master reached for it, praised it, etc. So that foolish, incompetent, unskillful cook does not gain gifts of clothing, wages, or bonuses. For what reason? Because that foolish, incompetent, unskillful cook does not pick up the sign of his own master's preference. So too, bhikkhus, here, some foolish, incompetent, unskillful bhikkhu dwells contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. While he dwells contemplating the body in the body, his mind does not become concentrated. His corruptions are not abandoned. He does not pick up that sign. Okay, so the sign of concentration. He dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, and likewise mind in mind, or phenomena in phenomena. So these are the four foundations of mindfulness. Ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. While he dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, his mind does not become concentrated. His corruptions are not abandoned. He does not pick up that sign. That foolish, incompetent, unskillful bhikkhu does not gain pleasant dwellings in this very life, nor does he gain mindfulness and clear comprehension. For what reason? Because, bhikkhus, that foolish, incompetent, unskillful bhikkhu does not pick up the sign of his own mind. Okay, part two, the competent cook. So now it's basically the entirely same thing, but this time the cook is skillful. Okay, suppose, bhikkhus, a wise, competent, skillful cook were to present a king or a royal minister with various kinds of curries: sour, bitter, pungent, sweet, sharp, mild, salty, bland. That wise, competent, skillful cook picks up the sign of his own master's preference. Today, this curry pleased my master, etc., etc., or he spoke in praise of the bland one. It goes through all the curries again. This time he's watching which ones his master prefers. Okay, that wise, competent, skillful cook gains gifts of clothing, wages, and bonuses. For what reason? Because that wise, competent, skillful cook picks up the sign of his own master's preference. So too, bhikkhus, here some wise, competent, skillful bhikkhu dwells contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. While he dwells contemplating the body in the body, his mind becomes concentrated. His corruptions are abandoned. He picks up that sign. He dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, mind in mind, phenomena in phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. While he dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, his mind becomes concentrated. His corruptions are abandoned. He picks up that sign. That wise, competent, skillful bhikkhu gains pleasant dwellings in this very life. That would especially refer to the jhanas. He gains mindfulness and clear comprehension. For what reason? Because bhikkhus, that wise, competent, skillful bhikkhu picks up the sign of his own mind. So I'll tell you a little story leading up to me finding this sutta. My first teacher recommended that when I ordained, recommended that I go reading the suttas myself and finding more advice from the suttas directly about meditation. And he felt this would be the way for me to find which objects of meditation might work the best. And I'm really glad he gave that advice. That was awesome. And as the years passed, I experimented with different objects of meditation from the suttas, and I found the ones which tend to work the best for me. And I have a list of, you might say, favorite ones. And on any given day, if you were to ask me, which one am I doing? It's almost always something from these favorites, okay? But sometimes I do more than one. It's possible to do more than one at a time. So maybe I'm doing mindfulness of space, but I also have mindfulness of my body. And yeah, I feel it is okay to combine these together if they were things which the Buddha taught. What I feel is not so wise is to go mixing what the Buddha taught with what was taught by, let's say, other systems of spirituality or other teachers outside of Buddhism. That I feel is not quite so smart to mix those together, just in order that one can keep it straight which benefits are coming from which system. Now, I don't say don't practice anything outside of Buddhism that is beneficial, but what I do say is keep it straight which benefits are coming from where, just so that the credit goes to where it is due, okay? Buddhism gave me these benefits, and then maybe since I did some yoga, I got these other benefits from yoga, and I know which one did what for me. Now, what I especially love about this Cook Sutta is it encourages us to do this experimenting. It encourages us to do this, paying attention to that which works. And when our meditation becomes the deepest, our meditation becomes the most powerful, the most blissful. When the meditation has high quality that way, we know we did the right thing for us. And I think it can be different from person to person what that right thing is going to be. And it can even be different day to day. Okay, so something you did that worked great today, it might not work as well tomorrow. But if you were willing to change your style a little bit, maybe it could work great tomorrow. You know, just like the king, he might want a certain curry today, but maybe he's, you know, he wants something different tomorrow. It's kind of like that, where what I've found over time is one needs some variety in one's practice. And it is a little bit like having variety in food to keep it interesting and satisfying. But having said this, what always surprises me is that notice how it's the king here who gets to pick what he wants, whose tastes change, and it's the cook's job to figure out what the king wants. And I feel that in just the same way, I always have to be flexible and I guess kind of like humble as to what is going to work for me on a given day. And usually my first guess is wrong. If I think that a certain object of meditation is going to work great, I'll try it for a little while, but nothing really happens. But then I'll try a different one. Ah, that one works much better. So I'm usually wrong in my first guess, maybe even second, third guess, what's the right one to do that day. And it's kind of like it isn't me who picks the objects of meditation. It's kind of like the objects of meditation pick me. You know what I mean? It is waiting for me to choose it. And it's my job to figure out what the right one is, just like this cook in the sutta. It's the cook's job to pay attention to the king. So that, to me, is quite a wondrous, and I don't know what the right word here is. It's like, it's a bit of a mystery every day what the right one is going to be. And one needs to have this sense of curiosity and wonder as to, okay, what will work? What will work? What should I try? And I feel that this attitude is necessary in order to not get too, like, overconfident that I know how to meditate. I know the right way to meditate. Don't anybody come tell me how to meditate. I'll tell you. There's this one ultimate technique. It's the perfect technique for everybody. It's one size fits all, okay? Your job is to just listen to me teach you the one size fits all. That does not really fit with my experience. Maybe there are monks, and they do find some technique, and it does work really well for them. Maybe they do it every day, and it works every day. That's great. But it's been my experience. I do need that variety. And that variety always has to be figured out what the right thing is, just like the cook has to figure out what the king wants. So the sutta is very true to my experience. I'll just conclude there. Okay, let us now invite our departed relatives, friends, and all beings to rejoice in the merit we have made. Let us recite together. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang no nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang wo nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Etawata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Let us make an aspiration for Nibbana. Idang me punyang asawakaya wahang hotu. Idang me punyang nibbana sa pachayo hotu.